AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Good Saturday morning to you, my friend, and welcome home. You are home. I'm Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer, custom home builder, custom home designer. Join me, will you? As we once again set our might, I keep doing that. I just keep doing it. Set our mites, our minds. It's my 6 o'clock in the morning version of mind mites. Join me once again. And again, as I try and say this one line, as we set our minds and our hands to the noble work of turning your ordinary house into an extraordinary home. We'll get there. Thankfully, it's not just me here sitting all alone. The team is here. They're ready to roll. My better half, my design partner and best friend, Tina, is sitting across the table from me, working furiously at something. I think she's organizing commercial reads, I think. I don't know. Anyway, we're all here. Let's get to it, shall we? It is a new year, if you hadn't noticed. Lots of new things happening. It's a big week ahead. We're getting a new president inaugurated on Wednesday. And, there are vaccines coming out. And despite the fact that the pandemic is going crazy, spiked as high as it's ever been, there is nonetheless hope on the horizon, a light at the end of the tunnel that maybe, perchance, somebody doesn't completely drop the ball, at some point, maybe this year, life starts to get back to normal. Who knows? And yet, we are still here. And yet, you are still focused on your home, as you should be, because it is the high holy temple of your life. It is the HQ from which you live your life. And today, since we're still in the kind of new year mode, we're still in January, I thought it would be a great time to do one of our regularly repeating shows. We do it a couple times a year. New stuff. It's light. It's fun. I'm not going to drag you through any deep design theory today, I promise. It's too early in the morning for that. But I do want to talk to you seriously about some of the new things that are out there. And now here is how Dean curates a new stuff list. Because obviously there's a whole heck of a lot of new stuff that we aren't going to be able to cover today. So why do I pick the items that I pick? Well, I try and make as wide a spread across the spectrum of interest as possible, number one. So we've got things that are represent trends that people are building into their homes. I've got some uber practical items, which are just tools, and just about everything in between. I've got a couple of, I have an appliance pick. I've got a bathroom fixture pick or two. I just basically want to use, curate a list for you that touches on certain things, all of which represent things that you should be aware of or would like to be aware of in regards to the plans that you have for your home. Even though there's a good chance that a lot of you are like, well, I'm not going to do that. And I'm not going to get one of those. That's fine. But having a sense of where things are going, that's what this list really helps you with as you try and figure out the future design potential of the place that you live. Okay, does that make sense? Well, good. Where is my list? It's here somewhere. I think it just got covered up. Hang on. Oh, it's right behind my... Okay, there it is. I was holding it in my hand. What can I say? Maybe I should have another sip of coffee. Hang tight. All right. On the top of today's list, bath vanity warming and refrigeration drawers in the bathroom. Okay, so this is one of those things I just warned you about. You're thinking, what the heck? I've never heard of that before. What do I need that for? It's just food for thought. And I'll tell you how it applies to encouraging you in the direction that hopefully you're already heading with your bathroom. There are a new set of fixtures out there, or I should say some fixtures, some of which have been around for a while, that are being applied now to bathrooms. And the warming drawer, I think, is a natural evolution of the warming towel rack, okay, which are still very popular and have gotten more and more popular. You know, there are towel bars that you can hang in your bathroom that have an electrical current running through them that will warm your towels. And there is nothing quite so luxuriant as reaching for a towel in the morning after your bath or your shower that is already all warmed up for you. Well, they have their limits in that they partially warm the towel and they expose the towel to the open air in the bathroom all night long as they try and warm the towel. So now we're talking about a warming drawer. A warming drawer, very much like if you have always wanted one of these for your kitchen that you would do proofing in or anything like that. This is a warming drawer that if there's room, we're starting to build them into bathroom vanities. And inside that drawer are your towels. Oh, come on. Tell me that that doesn't sound great. That you open a drawer and there's a couple of hot, toasty towels waiting for you. Okay, so that's the drawer. What about the refrigeration drawer? Well, you know, or hopefully you know, do you know that there are refrigeration drawers out there? Drawer refrigerators that have been around for kitchen use and bar use for many a moon now. The refrigeration drawer, the theory for a bathroom is this. The humidity and heat, now listen to me now. Humidity and heat created by showers and baths can shorten the shelf life of certain medications, vitamins, which some people tend to keep in their bathroom, and beauty products, okay? It is a fact, a scientific fact, that beauty products that are chilled are actually more soothing and go on the face better. They are easier to use when they are chilled. And so a refrigeration drawer in a bathroom vanity allows you to keep vitamins, medications, chilled beauty products at their optimal temperature for use in the bathroom. So this was what I'm saying. I'm not expecting that you're going to run out and say, well, we got to get one of those now. Great. Thanks, Dean. No, it is simply this. It is a clear indication that the direction that bathrooms have been headed for years now that I have been sharing with you again and again and again, the fact that bathrooms are becoming more and more a destination spot, a retreat, a spa-like environment. This is yet another confirmation that that is where baths are going. So forget about the warming drawer or the refrigeration drawer. If you are planning a bath remodel and you have been thinking, should we really center in on making it more of a destination? The answer is yes, because that is what we are doing with baths these days. And honestly, I don't see it as it's not a fad. It's a trend because it's been happening for a few years, but it's not a fad. We are not going back. That's the way it's going to be. All right. So much more to share with you this morning. So much more to come. I'm so glad you have joined us. You're listening to Home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. We'll get back into it when we come back. KFI, Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer, forever occupying the space between the world as it is and the world as it should be, because that's my idea of home. You're listening to Home, where every week we help you better understand that place where it is you are living. Hey, I know it's early, but I want to hear about what's going on with your home today. So coming up in just a few minutes, let's go to the phones and talk, shall we? The lines are open now, so now's your chance. Jump into the queue. The number to reach me at, 833-2-ASK-DEAN. 833-2-ASK-DEAN. Anything you want to talk about regarding your home. You got a construction question, you got a design question, a DIY issue, whatever. The whole spectrum. Call me and let's talk about it. All right. Back to our list of new stuff. Here's a quickie. And it should make sense. The website that I want you to go to and take a look at these guys are is called FireNado. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. The FireNado. Fire, like F-I-R-E. NADO, N-A-D-O, like it was a tornado of fire. You know what I'm saying? And the reason that it's named that, because the product line is called FireNado, I just think it's a really useful issue in spiral gas log burners. Okay, so it's still wintertime. There's still a chance that you want to light up the fireplace, especially if you have a gas log set. And if you have a gas log set, then you've probably struggled from time to time over the years with the idea of, like, how realistic is that flame in there? One of the reasons why a gas log flame is not as realistic as it could be is because gas log burners are traditionally straight pipes. They are the gas supply pipe in there is just a straight line, and it has to move up through the silica sand that's around it, so that disperses the flame a little bit, but not too much. Still, the flame is pretty much coming in through a straight line, and then it has to wrap up around the logs, and yeah it's fine, but we want more than fine, don't we? That's we're always striving for that here on the program. So the FireNado gas burner is simply that. It's a pan that produces the flame for underneath your gas logs. But these burners are not a straight line. They are, in fact, three spiral burners, which means that they will distribute some flame towards the back of the logs, the center of the logs, the front of the logs, in a what appears to be an incredibly random pattern. And as a result, you get a way more realistic flame coming up through your gas log. So you can check that stuff out. And the same, by the way, holds true for your outdoor circular fire pit, which they also sell burners for. So find that at thefirenado.com. All right, one more item here in the, well, this one kind of stands apart. I'm now going to speak to all of the you who have ever thought, you know what? I'm going to try and install a new door. I'm going to fix the hinges, put in new hinges, adjust a latch, or just put in a new door altogether. Front door, interior doors, doesn't matter. If you've noticed, the art of installing a door is far, far trickier than it first appears. Why? Because you have this large vertical rectangle that is only attached to the house on one side. And that vertical rectangle does not, by definition, sit down on the floor. It is up above the floor. And as a result, it wants to just fall. Gravity wants to pull it all wonky as you're trying to make really precise adjustments to it. So, what would be of help to this? Well, let me tell you, 35 years of doing finished carpentry work, I have a special pair of boots that I use. I've just gotten used to the fact that the sole on my Red Wings are a certain thickness. And so what I'll do was when I'm hanging a door and getting it prepped to actually go up on its hinge, I will literally set one of my foot, in fact, it's my right foot almost always, off to the side. I will prop the door up on the edge of my sole and then lift it up just enough so that it sits straight in the opening. That takes some practice. Let me tell you, there's a better way now. There is a tool out there made by DoorStud. DoorStud, I think the website is doorstud.com, and they are door hanging skates. What they are is these two-wheeled skates that have a little slot in the middle that a door rests down in, and each of the wheels on the skates is adjustable. So basically, imagine setting a door down inside these two little jigs, and now it's sliding around on wheels that are adjustable. You can raise it up just to the right height off the floor, just to the right height, and roll it into the jam so that it's not falling one direction or the other, and it will sit there stable, level, plumb, and at the proper height for you to do all of the adjustments. It's just worthy of honorable mention this morning. I'm so impressed with these guys, door hanging skate jigs. All right, when we come back, why don't we, we're either going to take a call or I'm going to talk to you about a brand new washer dryer combo that's out there on the market. You are home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. Up next, more good stuff and your calls.
We can dance if we want to, we can leave your friends behind. Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. See, we can go where we want to.
KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. You are home with me, Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. We're talking about new stuff for your home this morning. But now, as promised, it's time for us to talk direct, just you and me. So why don't we go to the phones? Let's talk to Nancy. Hey, Nancy, welcome home.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. I have a question. We have a custom home with very deep eaves, and my in-laws lived here first. They added a patio on the back. They took the roof up to the edge of the eaves. They covered the eaves with plywood and then stained it because the outside of the home is all redwood. It's not nice looking, and I want to change it.
Okay. Okay. So we're not talking about the eaves on the house, right? We're talking about the patio cover, yes?
No, we're talking about the eaves on the house. They took the patio roof right up to the edge of the eaves. So to make it look even, they covered the eaves with plywood and then stained it.
All right, so there's plywood on the bottom of the eaves?
Yes.
Okay, that's what. So we're talking about a boxed eave. And now, that's true all the way around the house?
No,
or just where the patio cover is?
Just at the patio.
Okay. And is there any reason why we can't remove that plywood?
We can, but then you have the eaves. And wouldn't that look strange? Because they're white, and the inside of the patio is a natural wood.
Okay, I think I see what I'm struggling to see the exact hookup there, but I'll put it this way. You could do a number of different things. Number one, if we just want to change out the plywood, that's probably, you know, if we can't unbox the eave, if we can't take the plywood off the bottom of the eave because it's going to expose the way that the eave connects with the patio cover and all of that stuff. That's the sense that I'm getting with you. Then perhaps the best thing to do, Nancy, is simply replace the plywood with something that will stain better and that something is more attractive. Now, let me ask you this. When you look up anywhere else around the house, when you look up underneath your eaves, what do you see?
Just a white eave.
Okay, but the wood that's above, the wood that's running up above the eaves, that, you know, from the outside of the roof until we get to the line of the house, are there like little lines or grooves in it, in that wood?
No.
There aren't?
No.
It sounds like that we've got plywood all around the house in the eaves.
No.
Yes.
Just,
go ahead.
No, just in the patio. Yeah, the eaves, like I say, it's a custom home, and my father-in-law moved into it and finished it, and, you know, he wasn't a carpenter like you, but anyway, the eaves, everybody remarks on how nice and deep our eaves are, which are really good in the summer. You know, it's a lot cooler.
Right, no, I understand that. I know they're deep, and they're painted white.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is this: when we let's say we've got the house hasn't been roofed yet, when we typically start to get ready to roof over a new roof, the part of the roof that's hanging out over the outside the line of the house, that's what we call the eaves, right? That
right.
part we don't normally lay plywood down on. That part we use what we call a starter board. We put tongue and groove, 3/4 inch tongue and groove boards down. And the reason why we put this interlocking tongue and groove down for the distance of the eaves until we get to the line of the house is because you can look up and see the underneath side of the eaves around, and we don't want to see plywood from up there. I'm not talking about on the bottom of the eave. I'm talking about up above the rafter boards. We don't want to look up and just see plywood, because plywood is kind of a cheesy way to do the roof line up there. So we do what we use is called starter board, which is this tongue and groove. It's usually 1x6. They're about 5.5 inches wide or so. And we do a little course of those until we get past the line of the house. That then, you know, you can stain it, you can paint it, you can do whatever. But it makes an eave looks attractive. And then from the edge of the house in the rest of the roof, then we use plywood to sheathe the rest of the roof. That's probably what's going on around your house, because if it's exposed eaves, there's got to be something up there that's attractive looking up above the rafters that got painted white. In your situation where the eaves join the patio cover, somebody, in order to cover up that join, they've put plywood, and plywood is a yucky material for just an outside exposed situation. So my suggestion is this, that you take off the plywood and replace it with something that looks more like what's going on with the rest of the eaves, which is a series of starter boards or tongue and groove, like 1x6 tongue and groove. It will look way more attractive. You can clean up and tidy up and trim up the edges. You can stain it if you want to stain it with the patio cover or paint it with the house. Either way, the point is, this is sort of the finishing board for eaves around a house. And as a result, this will give you a better finished look. Now, without a photograph and seeing exactly the situation, I can't give you much more guidance other than that. But I get it. I've seen that before, where somebody just uses a sheet of plywood to cover up where they've joined one section of a house to a patio cover. And I agree, it's not an attractive thing. Take that off and use a tongue and groove 1x6 instead, or the equivalent thereof. You can make some really attractive transition piece there, or at least more attractive, that will take the stain the right way and not look like a piece of plywood next to your patio cover. Nancy, thanks for the call. Sorry that I was a little slow on the uptake there of trying to understand the connection point, but I promise my brain is actually starting to work now. All right, when we come back, how about we take some more calls and see if I can get one right? We'll try that. You're home with Teen Sharp, the House Whisperer. And we're back. KFI, Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. Welcome home. Hey, we are talking new stuff today, but we're right in the middle of taking calls, and I want to get back to the phones. Let's talk to Nick. Hey, Nick. Welcome home.
Dean. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, I have a question about my sprinkler system. I recently moved into the house about 8 months ago, and slowly but surely, my grass started becoming a swamp, and I started turning down the amount of water going out to the sprinklers, you know, per minute each day, and I still had the same issue. So I was under the assumption maybe it might have been the, you know, the solenoid controllers going out to the actual sprinkler heads, or possibly just a broken pipe. And it's a pretty big chunk of grass out there. So, you know, I'm wondering if I should just start poking around and try to find the actual break out there in the PVC lines, or if I should just kill the grass, dig it all up, fix it, and then put in some sod. I'm kind of at that stage in figuring this thing out.
Oh, I see. Yeah, it can get confusing. And the thing that... So you're basically at a place where you got to figure out where the break in the line is. You suspect that there's a break. It sounds like there's a break in the line, Nick. If it's just getting really soppy, there's a break in the line. But here's the problem. With all those sprinkler heads out there, when you turn on and test one of your circuits, when you open up one of your valves, the sprinkler heads themselves are masking over because they're getting everything wet, right? So they are confusing your investigation. So here is the thing. Yeah, I mean, if you're just sick and tired of it, then, you know, pull it, fix it, put in new sod, whatever. But if you're still trying to resolve the problem, the key is this. You want to grab your sprinkler heads, whichever, however many heads are, run to the hardware store, get yourself some caps, some risers, sprinkler risers with some caps on them. And so here's the key. You take out the sprinkler heads, cap with a little temporary capped riser so water is not going to flow out of the heads, and then turn on the circuit. So now the sprinklers are not going on in the sense that they're confusing the lawn with wetness everywhere, and then we wait. We cap all the heads off, turn the water on to the circuit, and then we wait. I guarantee you, you're going to start to see where, you know, a bubbly wet area starts to show up, and kaboom, there is your break. And so the chances of being able to locate the leak are much, much higher. But you got to get the ancillary water out of the way first. That's the thing.
Yeah, true. Okay. Thanks, Dean.
All right. Hey, I got one right. Nick, thanks for your call. You made me look good. all right, let's talk to Tony. Hey, Tony, welcome home.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning. I am well.
I have a quick question. I live in a two-bedroom, one-bath slab foundation home, and I wanted to add an extra toilet. And I had some contractors come. They said they'd have to tear up the slab to connect the pipe for the new toilet, and it was going to cost thousands of dollars. And then one day I was doing research on the internet, and I found this toilet that had like a little incendiary device in the back, and it connects to the line in the sink and the water line in the sink. And that's all it is. I guess it, you know, it goes down the toilet and then sits right and incinerates it, and it goes out the drain. I wanted to know if you've heard of it and would you recommend it?
Okay. Good question. Really good question. Because you know what? People struggle with that all the time. They're like, well, I want to add a toilet, and but I don't want to do all of the slab tearing up work. That would be one creative option. So, but I got to correct you on a couple of things. All right. I just want to clarify a couple of things. You use the word incinerator. Okay. Incinerator is a popular brand of garbage disposal, right? The incinerator. Okay. In fact, it's so popular a brand of garbage disposal that a lot of people just call their garbage disposals incinerators, okay?
Okay.
But when it comes to toilets, it's actually misleading. So let me clarify two things. There is such a thing as an incinerating toilet. An incinerating toilet is a toilet that actually requires no plumbing hookup whatsoever, because it is a dry base toilet, and underneath the bowl there actually is, it does require power, because there actually is a heating mechanism that incinerates with heat, incinerates the solid waste, turns it to ash. Okay. I've talked about those toilets before on the show, because they're a viable choice when it comes to sometimes difficult accessory dwelling units that you can't run sewer to, or if you're building something out in the outback somewhere, a cabin out somewhere. You know, those are reasonable options. They're very expensive, but they're less expensive than putting in septic tanks or running sewer lines in some cases. That's an incinerating toilet. The toilet you're talking about is a macerating toilet, okay? Macerating. What it means is you got the toilet, and right behind the toilet proper is a catch tank. That tank has a high-speed macerating blade in it, like a garbage disposal, okay? It has a high-speed macerating blade and an electric pump. A macerating toilet takes the solid waste, it runs it through the garbage disposal blades that spin at very high speed so that it all gets liquefied. And then the pump takes over and pumps it out into whatever waistline is nearby. And the reason macerating toilets exist is that sometimes, especially back east, somebody wants to put a toilet down in the basement, way below the sewer lines. So a macerating toilet is what we call an upflush toilet because it can be placed down below the gravity-fed sewer lines, and it will take the solid waste, macerate it, turn it into liquid, and then pump it up vertically up into the next available gravity-fed sewer line. It's what we call an upflush toilet. But one of the applications is what you're talking about, which is it's not necessarily going up. It just, in your case, probably goes sideways and pumps it into a nearby drain line for a sink or what have you, tub or shower, whatever the nearest sewer drain line is of appropriate size. So it's basically doesn't need a gravity feed and therefore you don't need to dig in through the slab. They can be temperamental at times, but it is a potential viable solution for you. So I would say, get two or three opinions, please, on it, Tony, before you commit, because you don't want to just run to the easiest answer necessarily. But I just want to clarify, if you go out there asking, hey, I want an incinerating toilet, somebody's going to sell you a $5,000 toilet that literally incinerates with heat. You're looking for a macerating toilet. That's the kind of thing that you'll find. Those are far less expensive, and they do exactly what I just described. Tony, thanks for your call, bud. Appreciate it. When we come back, more new stuff. Maybe for some of you, a macerating toilet is a new thing because you never heard of it before. So there, boom. Bonus round. I'm so glad you joined me this morning. So much more to come. You're home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer on KFI. KFI AM 640. Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app, you are listening to Home. Hey, I am Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer, custom home builder, custom home designer, here with you live like I am every weekend, Saturdays from 6 to 8, Sunday mornings from 9 to 11. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the second hour of our program. I was just laughing here because I'm looking out the window. Tina has left me temporarily because the chickens were squawking, and we realized we hadn't let them out before the show started. So Tina's letting the chickens out. That's what she's doing. Methinks the ladies protest too much. There it is. I can't get my mouth working today. I've already been doing the show for an hour, and my mouth is still not working correctly. Please accept my apology for that. All right, we are in the middle of new stuff for 2021. Just a short list of things that I think are interesting and pertinent to those of you who are planning remodels, maybe doing work, maybe shopping for new appliances, who knows what. Kind of a broad spectrum of items here. Certainly not all the new things that have come out for this year, but a good selection. So let's dive back in. At the top of my appliance list is the LG Wash Tower. Wash, not Watch Tower, Wash Tower, okay? What this is, when you go into the appliance store, you may not actually notice it as a standout immediately because you're used to seeing large, extra-large capacity front-loading washers and dryers stacked vertically. In fact, it's become hugely popular, and I would say that, well, at least half the time, I think more so. I see washers and dryers stacked vertically now more often than not. That was kind of a revolution in and of itself a few years back when the front loaders came out and proved themselves to be reliable and convenient and so on, and then the stackable thing. But there are some downsides to the stackable, especially for those of you who are vertically challenged, shall we say, shorties out there. And that is, when you stack the dryer on top of the washer, the controls for the dryer are all the way up at the top, and they're not all that convenient to reach, right? And you still have two completely separate units. So this is what has changed with the LG Watchtower. It is, as far as I know, the world's first extra-large capacity, full-sized, single-unit stacked washer and dryer. And that's why I said you may not notice it, because you may look over at wherever the washers and dryers are at the appliance store and just assume that's another stacked unit. But it's not another stacked unit. It is a single tower where the washer and the dryer are combined together inside the same frame. Now, I'm not talking about the washing machines that try to be a dryer after the fact. There's still a washing machine down below and a full-size washer up above. It looks pretty much like a stackable unit, but there are some significant differences. Difference number one, because we don't have to repeat the legs and the lower pan on the dryer and all of that, this unit is about 3.5 inches shorter than when you combine a stacked unit together. Number two, the controls for both are right in the middle. They're above the washer and below the dryer. So all the controls are right there where it's super easy to reach them. And three, and this is impressive, there's some new technology going on inside the guts of these machines. The washer has a set of fabric sensors so that when you pop a load into the washing machine, it actually has a pretty dang good track record for detecting what kind of fabric it is, cotton, synthetics, so on, and adjusts the wash cycle accordingly. And while it's doing that, because it's one unit with the dryer, it communicates to the dryer, hey, got a load of cotton coming to you. And as a result, the dryer also automatically adjusts for those specific fabrics. And I was asked early, I think Bill Handel asked me on Wednesday, well, what if your load is a mishmash of fabrics? Well, then it's going to take an average of those and do kind of an average cycle accordingly. So it gets it right. It gets it right, I am told, more often than not. And this is kind of cool for convenience sake. You've ever thought, you know, how long is this whole thing going to take? Well, the Watchtower will give you a time estimation. Because the washing machine knows the fabric, it knows the cycle it's going to run, it's communicating to the dryer. The dryer is telling it, okay, it's going to take this long for this load. The total time is available to get these things from putting them in the washer to out of the dryer. It will tell you the total time elapsed so that you can count on when the laundry is done, period. Pretty nice stuff. I suspect that other brand manufacturers are going to come out with their own towers right now. As far as I know, the LG Watchtower is the first single-stacked unified unit out there. I was actually fiddling around with it over WDC the other day, and it's impressive. There's nothing different about the interiors. They are extra-large capacity washers and dryers. But I like the fact that they will fit into a smaller size cabinet scenario. And Tina loved the fact that the controls were all centralized right in the center for the whole thing. There you go. Should I do? No, I'm gonna leave this over for when we return. Let's talk about one of the practical issues of construction that have always, always just been an annoyance. And that is, what are you going to do with the dryer vent? Where is the dryer vent going to go? Is there a convenient close-by place for it to exit the house? And if it has to run too far, isn't that a problem? And doesn't it create issues with lint buildup? And yes, it does. And is there a solution? Yes, there is. We'll talk about that when we return. I'm so glad you joined me this morning. There's a lot more to come. You're listening to Home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. I'm lonely now. No, I'm supposed to be unhappy without someone. KFI, Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer, at your service. I'm so glad you joined me this morning. Hey, I would love to talk to you about what's going on with your home today. So coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to go back to the phones. The lines are open now. Now's your chance. Jump into the queue. The number to reach me at, 833-2-ASK-DEAN, 833-2-ASK-DEAN. Until then, we are going to continue with our list of new stuff for 2021. A smattering of new things all across the board. What's next on my list? I teased you before we went to the break about dryer vents. Dryer vents have always been an issue, right? Sometimes when you build in or we're going to change the location of a laundry room or even out in the garage somewhere, it's a pain in the bootay to run the dryer vent to an appropriate place so that the lint is exiting the house outside. In fact, some folks have just resorted to putting the little lint sock at the end of the dryer vent line, and you have to just keep cleaning it out and emptying it out all the time. Dryer vents are a problem. They are a problem not just because there's solid material blowing through them, but they're a problem because that solid material is being affected by hot, humid, moist air, and it makes that stuff want to stick to the inside of the vent. And so if it doesn't get cleared out all the way, you can get all sorts of buildup, and in worst-case scenarios, that buildup can lead to the dryer overheating or even catching on fire at times. So, you know, it's a hassle sometimes when you don't have a convenient exit right behind the dryer to blow the vent out. So, in fact, I'm so serious about it on my house. I don't even have a dryer hose. Our dryer is backed up to an exterior wall, and there is literally about, what, 12 inch? There's less than 12 inches of pipe from the back of the dryer out to the outside of the house. It's literally just whoop, and there it is, right? A solid pipe, non-corrugated, and out it goes. But if you are not so fortunate to be set up that way, here is something relatively new for you to know about. There is such a thing now as dryer duct supplemental inline exhaust fans. And what these are, I know that's a mouthful. It's a fan, a blower, that you add to the dryer vent line, okay? Now, the dryer duct has to be solid metal, has to be smooth metal on the inside for this to work appropriately, so you get rid of the flexi hose. But here's the nice thing. You can vent a dryer straight up, right out of the roof if you want. You can vent it out the sidewall. You can vent it up, around, over, down, through a couple of elbows, because this thing is powerful. It is intended to be added to an exhaust duct when the duct length has to be over 25 feet, and it can be up to 125 feet. And basically what it does, it plugs in, it's got its own blower motor and its own activated switch, and it plugs in and it turns on every time the dryer turns on. So when the dryer turns on, the supplemental fan in the line turns on as well, and you can get the lint blown out of the system and not worry about how far it has to travel before it goes. Next, there is a hammer revolution taking place, quietly, as it were, where if you run to the hardware store, you're going to see fewer and fewer steel hammers, traditional steel hammers, up on the shelf, and more lightweight titanium hammers. Hammerheads, I mean. Handles, I don't care about. What's going on with titanium? It's very simply this. Titanium is an incredibly hard metal, harder than steel. It holds its shape better, and it's much, 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 much lighter than steel, at least half as heavy as steel per its overall size. So, isn't that going to affect the way that we drive nails if the hammer isn't so heavy? Well, the answer is yes, it will affect the way that you drive nails. You drive them better. And why is that? Science! Because of this. And I'm not going to get buried into the formula, but if you just need to know this. Essentially, force or kinetic energy the formula for it is that kinetic energy equals half the mass times the velocity squared. So what does that mean? Well, just to put it in very simple terms, the weight of the metal on the end of your hammer is not half as important as the speed that hammerhead travels in translating into force. And it simply means this: you can have a lighter hammer that swings faster and have equal or greater force coming out of it than the big old heavy handle. So drives the nails just as well. It's my new favorite hammer is a 16-ounce stiletto framing hammer with an axe handle, 18-inch axe handle coming on the bottom. I drive nails as well, if not better, than ever before. And guess what you don't have with it? Carpal tunnel syndrome, bad elbow, strained wrist, sore shoulder at the end of the day. And there you go. The hammer revolution. Speaking of hammers, some people have what I call, is what everybody calls, spherophobia. You know what spherophobia is? It's not a fear of spheres. It doesn't spell that way. It's S-F-Y phobia. It's fear of hammers. Some people just don't like, a lot of DIYers would like to have a nice hammer around, but they just don't like swinging the hammer. You get nervous. You're not good at it. You're not practiced at it. You're afraid you're going to hit something. You're afraid you're going to hit your thumb. All these reasons. Milwaukee has just come out with a cordless palm nailer. Palm nailers have been around in the pro arena for a long time. We use them to drive in small bits of hardware nails in tight areas. A palm nailer, it fits in your palm, but the thing is, up until now, palm nailers are all pneumatically driven. They've had air hose, and you got to hook them up to a compressor. But Milwaukee now has a cordless battery-operated palm nailer. You pick it up, boom. All you do is you slide its sheath over the top of a nail, and it uses kind of a jackhammering technique where it's bum, 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 and it just slowly but surely drives the nail right on in. Not one big strike. You're not going to mar the furniture or the finish or anything around it. It's easy. It's safe. Everybody feels like they're in control of it. And so I'm now recommending it to DIYers as a hammer alternative, the Milwaukee cordless palm nailer. All right. I got a lot more to cover, but we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to go back to the phones. You're home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. Your call's up next. KFI, AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. You're home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. I like Peter. I could just sit here and listen to him and just blow the whole segment. All right, as promised, it's time to get back to the phones. So let me see if I can help you out with your home today. Why don't we talk to John? Hey, John. Welcome home.
Hi, Dean. Hi, thank you very much. I'm buying a condo that has ceramic tile flooring, and it looks beautiful, but my question is, am I going to regret in the long run not ripping this out and putting in luxury vinyl plank flooring? I don't know. The home inspection guy said that he found a couple of cracks. And there was one place where the grout was missing. And I'm just wondering, is this a harbinger of bad things to come? Does this degrade over time? Or what's your opinion?
A few thoughts on that. Number one, I have never personally been a fan of ceramic tile everywhere throughout an entire place. It's cold. It can be really kind of cold. But it's common. I got to say, it's really common in condos and things that were formerly rental properties. Why? Because it's bomb proof, right? It's that kind of thing where an owner who has potentially rented out their condo before has said, you know what, I'm fed up with the replacing carpets because somebody spilled, you know, all that kind of thing. And they just decided, just tile the whole thing. So I get that. I get it. I'm just not particularly a fan. If it were me, from a pure design perspective, I think that the idea of looking at a luxury vinyl plank would be a really, really near the top of my list, because the new luxury vinyl planks are both, they serve the purpose of doing what the ceramic tile was intended to do, which is they're bomb-proof, they're waterproof. You can flood the water heater, overflow the bathroom, you know, just do whatever in there, and you're not going to damage this stuff. But wood plank, simulated wood plank, some of them very, very good these days, very warm. Our son and daughter-in-law have luxury vinyl plank in their condo, and it's gorgeous. It just, it's beautiful. It's also really affordable and easy to deal with. So I'm a fan in a lot of different applications for that. Okay, so that's my design. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, no. So the ceramic tile would have to be ripped out, right? You can't just lay this on top.
You could technically lay it on top, but the ceramic tile is got to be really stable, really level, and I don't really recommend it. I would rather rip it out. Because, it's far better to just work off the slab for floor levels, door heights, all of that kind of stuff, appliance, you name it. You start building up the level of the floor with layer after layer. And if the ceramic starts to fail underneath the vinyl, then now you're in a world of hurt, because now you've got to pull back the click-lock luxury vinyl to get to fix the ceramic, and it's just going to be a problem in general, John. So, anyway, like I said, just to finish up with your question real quick, because it was kind of a two-part answer, that was my design perspective. But let me be honest about the ceramic tile. If it's been laid well, it could last for decades without any issues whatsoever. There's always going to be a little settlement in the slab, so maybe a crack pops through and maybe a little bit of grout pops out. That's minor and minimal. It's not necessarily an indication that the floor is failing in any way, shape, or form. So a ceramic tile floor that has been set well could last the life of the condo. So that's a builder's perspective, just saying it's not necessarily something that's going to be problematic for you. But from a design perspective, I like the luxury vinyl plank idea a lot better, because it's warmer, it's softer, it's more natural feeling, and it's not so cold. John, thanks for your call, buddy. Let's try Nina. Hey, Nina, welcome home.
All our doors were bought in a big box store, and we had them painted. They were spray painting, and this was about 2 or 3 years ago. And there are some panels that I would like to get redone that would look similar in application to a spray. Do you have any suggestions whether to use a roller? Or what kind of a roller to use to make it look similar to the original spray application?
Okay, so these are interior doors that and so
smooth.
What's
very
going?
Smooth. They're very smooth.
They're very smooth. Okay, and so it's really difficult to use a brush or a roller and end up with as glossy, smooth surface on a door as you would with a spray gun. It is, so I'm not going to lead you astray. It's not that you can't paint a door. And if you do so with a brush, I would recommend a brush as opposed to a roller, because a rollers just tend to leave nap behind, a little bit of texture behind them. you could attempt it with a brush. It used to, you know, there was a time when all doors were just painted with brushes, a really high quality brush. Tina painted all of the doors in our house with a brush, but here's the caveat. We intended, it's part of the design look of our house, because we've got this older kind of vintage look to this early 19th century look to our home, even though the remodel is brand new and these doors are only a year old now. We intended to see brush strokes on the doors and on some of the trim and on door jams and such. It's intentional to see that because it's this old world feel. If the glossy, smooth, no imperfections look is what you're going for, then you really need to get a painter in there, take the doors off, sand them down where there's trouble, and respray the doors so that, boom, it goes on like an automotive clear coat. If you're going to paint, though, just expect you're not going to get rid of all the brush marks. But if you do want to try, you definitely need to use a really good quality free-flowing paint like Benjamin Moore Advanced, which is a simulating, it's a water-based paint or a water-alked paint that simulates the old flow of oil-based paints, which are now becoming prohibited just about everywhere. So you want a really, really good quality paint. That's 90% of the work right there, that as it dries, and it dries slowly, it smooths out and it tends to fill in and coat over the brush marks. And that's the key. But I'm not going to tell you, if you use a brush, that you won't see any brush marks. Spraying is just, you know, it's a no-brainer when it comes to that. Nina, thanks for your call, my friend. And I hope that was some solid advice that will help you out. All right. When we come back, you know what? I got to finish up this list. I got to. There's a couple of things here that I've got to mention to you. So on with the new stuff when we return. You're home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. I don't want to rule it. I just want to live in it. KFI, Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer, welcome home. All I need is a cup of coffee, my wife, and maybe some bacon for breakfast. And it will quench my thirst to rule the world. All right, back to our new stuff. I got a couple last items that I want to share with you this morning. Well worth the wait. Number one, shake shingle roofs in California disappeared a long, long time ago because they're a fire hazard, just straight up. Wood roofs, combustible, and not good, considering where things have gone with the climate and with fire season, etc. Don't need to explain that. It was sad. It was a sad day, not for fire safety, but it was a sad day to see shake shingles go because they make beautiful roofs. You can put them in swirly wave patterns. You can mound them. I mean, they just make gorgeous roofs. So you just need to know that shake shingles are back, not in wood form, but in synthetic resin that is fire rated and allowed. And for a while now, I've been tracking various forms of artificial shake, and I haven't shared them with you because I haven't really been impressed, honestly speaking. Just doesn't fit the bill. But here we go. The company's name is Brava, B-R-A-V-A, synthetic fireproof shake shingles in several different colors and textures. And honestly, you're going to have to walk up to get within about 6 inches of and touch these things before you realize that they aren't actual real wood shake. And so since it's something that you're putting up on the roof, I'm going to give it my two thumbs up for because you can use them like we used to use the old shakes. We can swirl them. We can mound them. We can do everything that we did. They're cuttable. They're sliceable. They're customizable. And it's a brilliant roof. So shake roofs are back. Yay! all right, what else do I have for you here? Kohler has introduced, in honor of just general sanitariness and COVID, Kohler has a whole line of faucets and touchless toilets, touchless faucets and touchless toilet flushing. So now you don't even have to hit the handle on the side. There still is a handle on the side, but you don't have to hit it. You wave your hand over a little button on the top of the tank, and the toilet will flush itself. Nice. No contact, right? nice thing. The toilets range from between $600 and $800, so they're not on the cheap side of toilets. But listen to this. You can get the Kohler No Touch Flush Retro Kit, okay? It runs off of 4 AA batteries, and I don't know how often, because I haven't tried this out, I don't know how often those batteries have to be changed out, but the Retro Kit, $77. You can retrofit your existing flushy toilet with a no-flush toilet. So I think that's worth the price of admission right there. And we will end with a Kohler product today. If you're in the market for a $16,000 bathtub, then have I got a deal for you. Okay? So this falls under that category of, no, I'm not expecting that you're going to go out and buy this, but I do want you to see how this folds in seamlessly with this idea of creating spa-like environments. Kohler has introduced the Kohler Stillness Bath. You've got to go check this out online. I can only describe it to a certain degree. It is essentially a super deep bathtub, a Japanese-style soaker tub that has integrated at the bottom of it a hidden trough to collect water. And that trough is covered with maple wood grates all the way around. So this bathtub is designed to be filled up to overflowing so that when you get into it, the water is all the way at the top. It spills over the side. It runs down the side of the bathtub through the grates into the reclamation trough below and then gets recycled back into the scenario. The bathtub has... it has no jets. Yay. It's just a soaker tub, but it's got LED lighting that will turn the water in the tub deep purple, deep, rich, relaxing blue. And there is a mister component on the top that covers the top of the tub in fog as you sit in it. Now, it comes in different levels. I think the base model starts at like $6,000, and then you just keep adding all the features that I talked about until you get up to 16 grand. That's not the point. I don't want you to blow your entire bathroom budget on the Kohler Stillness Tub, but I do want you to see yet again, isn't it a sign that bathrooms are becoming spa-like retreats? Absolutely. And I guarantee you this also, in about 4 or 5 years, this tub is going to be within reach of most people who are remodeling their bathrooms, because that is the way of things. All right, everybody. Thanks again for spending the morning with me. I'm done for today. I will be back with you tomorrow from 9 to 11, and we're going to talk about your roof, one of the most common and most misunderstood things on your house. Handle on the Laws up next. Until then, whatever the plan is for the day, be intentional, be open, be kind today, and then get busy building yourself a beautiful life. Have a great Saturday. We'll see you tomorrow morning.